So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
One of the best food scenes in the country, right here in Minnesota. And nobody knows it like magazine food critic and James Beard Award finalist Jason DeRusha. Now bringing you the most interesting people and hottest trends. Let's listen in as DeRusha eats.
We talk a lot on DeRusha Eats about restaurants and chefs, but I love talking to people who are actually creating what it is that we eat, whether it's at the restaurant or whether it's at home as we approach grilling season. Today on DeRusha Eats, we're talking about American Wagyu beef. Oh, I've just hit all of the buzzwords, right? You've maybe noticed Wagyu taking over on so many different menus throughout the Twin Cities, throughout Minnesota. And a lot of that is the work of an operation called Feller's Ranch. And with us today, Troy Kapishke and Jeremy Johnson from Feller's to talk a little bit about beef, a little bit about cattle farming and butchering, and what the future is for American Wagyu. Troy, good to have you here.
Great to be here.
Jeremy is on the phone because where are you, Jeremy?
I'm at the butcher shop in Conger, Minnesota.
Tell everyone, where is Conger, Jeremy?
We're about 4 miles north of the Iowa border, southwest of Albert Lea, kind of where 35 and 90 meet. So,
how long have you been involved in butchering and in farming?
Seems like a lifetime, but 20-plus years now.
Feller's Ranch is a Minnesota company that sells beef to restaurants and sells it directly to you. You can buy it through the website, right, Troy?
That's correct.
Your background is interesting because you grew up on a farm, but you are not a rancher by trade, right?
I'm not a rancher by trade. I grew up in a farm in southern Minnesota, not too far from Conger. I grew up on a farm 20 miles south of Mankato, a little town called Vernon Center.
And you have built technology companies. You've been involved in all sorts of... You're an entrepreneur, right?
I'm a serial entrepreneur. Spend most of my life building technology companies.
So what on earth are you doing with this Wagyu beef company?
That's a great question. So I grew up on a farm. I got into curing my own meats about 13 years ago, just for fun. I would throw charcuterie parties, so I would cure my own copas and lomos and prosciuttos and colatella hams, and really got into the craft of kind of making artisan meats. And I actually was on a platform to look at buying software companies because I'm in the tech space. And it, you know, I think because of AI, they knew that I liked meat. So I saw a meat market come up for sale, Conger, Minnesota. And I'm like, don't click on it. Don't click on it. And I clicked on it. And that's when I met Jeremy Johnson, Jeremy and Darcy, and became their partners. And then most recently acquired Feller's Ranch. So we're really excited about all the activity that we have going on in this space.
Jeremy, describe kind of what the vision is and what your thought is about what Feller's Ranch should be.
Well, so we have a very unique business model. So lots of people raise cattle, lots of people process meat, but not very many do both. I think there's a lot of people trying to start that model now, but it's not easy selling the tail to the nose every week. It has its challenges, but one thing with Wagyu, I've never had anybody not like it, so it's easy to sell. I mean, it's not cheap by any means, but it's such a great product. Their eyes just light up when they try it. So for us, controlling everything, including the quality, the processing, the harvesting, partnering with some other producers to grow the company, we control it all, which isn't usually the case.
I do, and you mentioned Wagyu, and I really want to get into it and learn a little bit more about what Wagyu beef is, because the idea of American Wagyu on the surface sounds like a contradiction, right? Because Wagyu beef is a Japanese beef, right? Troy, when you first learned about Wagyu beef in America, were you sort of suspicious about it?
I was, and then...
You're a meat guy, so it's like, America, is this marketing or is this real?
Yep, that's right. And there's certainly marketing aspects of this industry, but I learned a lot from Jeremy going through this process of on American Wagyu. It's the line of the cattle, and but it's beyond the line of the cattle. It's very much how you raise the cattle, what you feed the cattle. The time before butchering the cattle is critical. So, and it's just an entire process for our farmers that we partner with to produce really high quality Wagyu.
What is it, Jeremy? How do you describe it?
Well, first of all, you know, we feed these cattle generally 26, 27 months. That's part of the reason the first question, why is it so expensive? Well, we feed them a year longer than most commercial cattle get fed. And for us, it's, you know, it's that marbling, you know, that's what we're after. You want that intermuscular marbling. That's what defines Wagyu and the quality of the Wagyu. So Feller's Ranch, we control the quality here at the plant. So nothing goes out under a Feller's Ranch label. It isn't a 6 to a 12 on the BMS marbling score. And just to explain that slightly.
Yeah, I was going to stop you because I know a little bit because I've had some, you know, Wagyu from Japan. And I know that it's really stringent as far as how they score that on a marbling scale. This is about like the tenderness and the fattiness in the best way and the juiciness. And it is a very different flavor experience when you really have the good stuff, don't you think?
Absolutely. Some friends of mine, we just had a spinalis, the ribeye cap, last week, and we seared it on a black stone, and then we put it in the oven for a few minutes, and we rolled it up like a pinwheel, and you cut it off, and it melted in your mouth. Like you couldn't explain it without trying it. So
yeah. So how do you control the quality? Because your Feller's Ranch is the name of the beef that comes out of your butcher shop, but there are farmers, family farmers, who sort of raise the cattle and are part of the, I don't know if you want to call it a cooperative or exactly, but that's sort of the model, right?
Yeah, we own a few nowadays, but we have partnered with three other families that are also raising Wagyu, and we've kind of set the specs we want, and we purchase from them. They're Minnesota families. We're kind of expanding more than we planned on, so we've partnered with another one who's just across the South Dakota border, but very close to us, just to help us with our growth, because we can't just butcher any beef. We're trying to hold to the very high end on the Wagyu scale. So
that's Jeremy Johnson. He's in Conger, Minnesota, Feller's Ranch. Troy Kopischke is with us at our studios. And Troy, you know, when you look at sort of the standard for Wagyu beef, is it a Japanese Wagyu cow that's sort of crossbred with an American cow? It's 50-50, or what is the lineage? What is exactly happening here?
Yeah, I'm going to have Jay answer that. I think, Jeremy, do you want to give a lineage, the history on the...
Like, how do you do it? How do you get an American Wagyu cow?
Yeah, well, generally, the standard in America is tends to be Black Angus crossed with the Wagyu bull. We found that we weren't consistent enough usually with that type of breeding to get the quality we wanted at the end. So we've tried to get just a slightly higher percentage of Wagyu. So you would take one of those that's a half Angus and a half Wagyu and then has a heifer calf, and then you breed it back, so now you're three quarters. That seems to be the sweet spot in America. The full bloods are really hard to raise and take a really long time. They're great meat, but financially it was a tough business. So by having that little bit of Angus and other, there's been a couple other successful breeds. It really helped us speed up the process and keep the quality we wanted. So
how many, like, how many, I guess I don't even know how you count it, how many heads of cattle are out there, Angus, or Wagyu cows that are being raised for you guys at any given time?
I think around 3,000 head between the group of them, but not all of those will make the grade Feller's Ranch wants. So we're very specific. So we're looking to do about 300 to 350 this year. Under the Feller's brand.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you look at, and I guess, you know, this goes to what you're talking about, Jeremy Johnson, Troy Kopischke from Feller's. This goes to the cost, right? When you see it at a restaurant or you see it if you're buying direct from you guys, you're like, well, why is this so much? Well, then you hear that, you're like, oh, well, why is it so little? I guess when you hear about the work that goes into
it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You know, Troy, for you from a, you know, as a farm guy, but then who grew up and became a tech guy, are there lessons of the tech world and of the industry world, that the business world, that you are trying to sort of help Feller's now go from being, and Feller's has been around for a bit. People, our listeners may be familiar with it, but, you know, to really make it grow, like, there are steps that have to be taken, I imagine.
Yeah,
some farming, some business,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. And I grew up on a special farm in southern Minnesota. My parents had a farm market. So we actually had 70 acres of vegetables as well as cattle. We did 800 head of feeder hogs and sheep. So we had a mixed farm. But I learned lessons on that retail from my father and mother about creating a high-quality product and always really taking care of the customer. And then the tech space has, for us, we've implemented things, good systems and processes. My background is, you know, I've done a lot of product development and contract manufacturing where we're building products for FDA approval, class one, class two, and class three medical devices. So we're trying to drive, I think, working with Jeremy is better systems and processes on the production side. And then I think we have a lot of experience through distribution channels and really building out a channel, both an online channel as well as an entire distribution network across the United States to move the product through.
Jeremy, when you converted to be Wagyu and converted your butcher shop, was there a learning curve? Did you have to train in a different way? Is there a different way you butcher the meat based on sort of the kind of quality you're looking for or the marbling you're looking for?
100%. We take time to separate almost every muscle out of the Wagyu, and we found muscles that we turn into steaks that you would not out of a regular commodity beef, just because they're not tender, but in the Wagyu they are. So like Bavettes and Denvers and Terrace Majors, and we pull Delmonico's, and we try to harvest every possible value added cut we can out of them to try to offset some of the expense, actually, by instead of turning all that into hamburger or roasts and things that restaurants could use. So
yeah, I think that's really interesting, and I want to ask you guys about Wagyu ground beef, Wagyu burgers, because I see those popping up a lot more, and I got to be honest, like, for me, if I'm going to spend money on I guess if it's the same price, like, whatever, but if I'm going to spend money on a beautiful Feller's Ranch Wagyu steak, like, I want the ribeye. I would want the Bavette or some of these other interesting cuts too, but like, I'm a little skeptical of the value you get as a consumer, as an eater, out of a Wagyu burger. Am I wrong on this? Maybe I am wrong.
You want to take that one, Jay?
Yeah, 100% wrong.
smash burger, a Wagyu beef smash burger, is it that different in flavor?
Oh, it's phenomenal. So we've probably done 50 tastings at restaurants across the cities in Minnesota, different places, and I'll be honest, I don't think we've ever lost one. I didn't get all their business sometimes because of the price, but I never left there without them saying our burger was better. So,
oh, interesting.
It's fantastic. Yeah, it's really different.
Describe it. How is it a meatier flavor, or is it more tender, or what is the difference?
It's just the sheer juiciness of it. You know, with that intramuscular marbling, if you get it hot, you sear the sides, you keep it in there, it's almost impossible to have a nice third-pound burger without a little juice running down your chin when
true.
You're done. So.
That's right. If you don't need a napkin from eating that burger, you're sort of wasting your time.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they overcooked the heck out of it, one or the other.
So. Mom, Dad, I'm not throwing shade, but the whole New Year's resolution thing, kind of slipping, no offense. Anyway, my best friend Jenny's dad, crushing it. He uses Blue Apron. He says he ordered one pan Assemble and Bake meals and these things called meal kits. They're all super easy to make. He keeps yelling, protein and fiber, baby. Also, the food, we tried it. So good. So maybe you check it out or whatever. Blue Apron. Get 50% off your first two orders plus free shipping with code LISTEN50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hey, it's Jason DeRusha with a message from Minnesota's pig farmers. Discover the meat of the North, pork. Pork is as Minnesotan as the lakes, trees, and people who call this state home. Did you know there are more than 30,000 pig farming families? They live and work in the North Star State, raising one of the safest, most delicious meats the whole world can enjoy. Pork is something we enjoy in the DeRusha family at least a few times a week. Maybe it's pork loin roast, shoulder, pork chops, ribs, bacon. Oh, I'm getting hungry just talking about it. It's so affordable, too. If you're looking for recipes, MNPork.com's got them. Great recipes like dilled pork cutlets, Parmesan-crusted pork chops, and you can feel good about eating pork from Minnesota farmers. They've been reducing their carbon footprint with better genetics, new technologies, and more. Pick up pork tonight for dinner at your local meat market or grocery store. Let's have Minnesota pork for dinner. Oh, yeah.
DeRusha Eats continues. Here's your host, Jason DeRusha.
Jeremy, tell us a little bit about your butcher shop, because you guys, I mentioned that you converted, but like, this is like, as far as Conger, Minnesota goes, like, that family butcher shop has been there for what, 90 years?
Yeah, it's 90 years this year. My wife and I have owned it since the early 2000s. We've grown it substantially. We process around 20 to 25 beef a week and 20, 25 hogs a week, some sheep, a couple hundred sheep a year. It's a full service. You know, the animals walk in here and they leave in a package. And then we have the USDA inspection. So almost all of it now goes to retail somewhere, not just home to people's freezers and like the old days in the butcher shop. So.
What is it like for you as far as being a part of the community like you guys are?
Oh, we have a huge support in Conger here. They've been great to work with as we've expanded. You know, unfortunately, when I started in Conger, we had a cafe, a hardware store, a lumber yard, a bank, and a manufacturing facility. Now we're about it. So, They really appreciate us being here. So,
Troy, is there a part of you, and I think about this a lot, we try to talk about farming on our show when we can, and I talk a lot to pork farmers and pig farmers in Minnesota. But for you as somebody who's built tech companies and kind of innovated in different ways, there is sort of a bigger mission at helping to preserve a pretty critical part of what makes Minnesota, Minnesota, which I do think is the agriculture part of our, you know, that's your background.
Yeah, for sure. I grew up in a very special place in southern Minnesota. I grew up on the Blue Earth River, surrounded by a community. Vernon Center's like 357 people. That's the community I grew up in. We had a famous locker there called the Vernon Center Locker. They did incredible work by the Montgomery family. And unfortunately, that locker burnt down a few years ago.
Huh.
And it's really hurt the community. And so when I kind of ran into Conger and I visited Jeremy and Darcy for the first time, it kind of brought back memories of us walking into the Vernon Center locker. And those small town locker and butcher shops that are sprinkled across Minnesota are really important for the food supply and producing product and delivering that back out into the communities and creates jobs. And it's important for the local farmers because that's where the farmers can go to get a little higher margin for processing their pork or beef.
Sure.
And it's important for the community.
That's Troy Kopischke. Jeremy Johnson is with us. Feller's Ranch is the name of the company, and you can find them online at fellersranch.com, where you can order your own steaks or grill packs or different things like that. I wanted to ask you guys about the global scenario right now, because farmers are concerned about tariffs, concerned about their markets outside of the country. You guys, I imagine, being a Minnesota beef operation, well, I'm just curious, does this impact you at all? Is there opportunity, perhaps, to tell that Made in America story for what you guys are doing at Feller? What's your take on that, Troy?
Yeah, the tariffs, my family started their farm market business in the 70s due to the farming crisis, due to uncertainty in the global markets. So firsthand, my parents literally sold vegetables at the end of the driveway to put food on the table. So we're certainly in that uncertain time and market.
Sure. Yeah.
Here. Today, we have the lowest beef herd in the United States since 1959. So the entire beef industry is down. Beef prices are skyrocketing just in general across.
We've seen that post-COVID, and some of that is that people are cooking more, there's more demand, but some of it is the reduction in the supply, right?
It's a supply problem, and we have gone.
What's happening? Why don't we have more? And I think about that in Minnesota. We have the land for it, but we don't have a huge beef operation in this state, really.
Yeah, we're known as pork in the pork community, yeah, for sure. But a big challenge that has happened across the U.S. is really due to the farming industry. So, you know, the cattle are assets on the balance sheet. So when the farming prices have dropped and farmers are cash sensitive, or they
sure
need cash to pay for fertilizer and seed to put in the ground, they have to sell their cattle to be processed in order to generate cash to put food on their own table. And so what that's done is they've been selling the cows, you know, to process.
Huh.
And so that ultimately then reduces the calves being produced for the next year. And so you got this cyclical problem. It's almost like a perfect storm. And that has generated a situation where we have the lowest beef herd since 1959. And there's a debate, but if you just tried to restart it, like get it swung back, you're talking 6 years out before we can get kind of rebuild the herd.
Are people selling their cows? Is it fewer cows, more corn and beans? Is that they're just planting those fields?
It's more about I need to sell those
just
cows
need cash
to get cash
just
in order
cash,
to generate income.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
Go ahead, Jay.
There's no incentive to build back your herd right now because they can sell a three-day-old calf for $1,200-$1,300. Well, that is the most money that rancher or farmer is ever going to make on that calf is at 3 days. So they're selling them off. They're not keeping back any heifers to grow their herd. They're just capitalizing the best they can.
And who are they selling them to? Where do they go?
The big commercial feedlots have still got to get sold. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting because you think, you know, as you mentioned, Troy, in Minnesota, you do have this pork community where you have some like family heritage kind of small operations. You have other larger sort of, it's all family run, but it's like you have different sizes. Some people doing heritage breeds, some people doing more mainstream stuff, whatever. But in the beef world in Minnesota, you have some of that, but like what an opportunity for farmers if they wanted to go the Wagyu route to try to go up market with what you guys are doing. And then perhaps there's more opportunity to make money out of the deal.
Yeah, we certainly, in the livestock industry today, farmers are trying to move up the value chain that, that we see. Some of the farmers are acquiring their own plants to process their beef and make a little higher margin over all the you know the vertical market of that. Jeremy, do you have any comments about that?
Yeah, it's a difficult process to go from the cattle raising world to selling meat. It's not without its struggle. I think it was easier for me to go the other way, to go up the chain backwards versus forwards. But
does your more you had experience in retail in selling as well as processing?
Yeah, I was doing the processing long before I got into the cattle business, so I knew what I was in for. So you got to sell the whole thing. So
And I'll say hats off to Jeremy. I mean, what's been fun partnering with Jeremy is just seeing his generosity across the communities in southern Minnesota. So some of these processing plants were acquired by farmers who understand farming, but they don't understand meat processing, and they run into trouble. And you know they could be viewed as a competitor, but Jeremy's there to help them out. You know, and it's been touching to see Jeremy help other folks out that are in the same industry. It's a really neat community.
Feller's Ranch is what we're talking about. Minnesota raised, processed, sold American Wagyu. Our guests today are Troy Kopischke, the co-owner, and Jeremy Johnson, who is in Conger, Minnesota at the Conger Butcher Shop, where they process all of the meat under the Feller's Ranch label. So I wanted to ask you guys a little bit. We are getting close to the summer sort of grilling season. I think beef comes into the equation a lot more for people as we get into this time of year. I wanted to ask you, Troy, I mean, you did the deep dive into meats and what is your favorite cut of beef? And then what is maybe the most underappreciated or underutilized, would you say?
So it depends on, I think, the breed of cattle. For Wagyu, I love the filet and a Wagyu. I also very much love a ribeye. I think the most underappreciated cut across cattle is, for me, is like a hanger steak or an outside skirt.
Yes.
Those are phenomenal.
Oh, so good.
Phenomenal flavoring.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm a huge fan of the way they taste. So
how about you, Jeremy? What is your favorite cut?
Hands down for me, it's the ribeye cap, the spinalis. That's that little outside piece on when your ribeye. We pull that off so we can leave the eye of ribeye steaks thicker for the restaurants. Otherwise, they get so big they're kind of thin. So it was kind of a new thing to me when we started the Wagyu, trying to find more value. But yeah, it literally melts in your mouth. So,
do you sell those retail, or where can people find those?
You should be able to ask any butcher for a spinalis, a ribeye cap, and Feller's Ranch is going to be adding them to their website soon. So,
yeah, that sounds delicious. Yeah, I think a lot of us you look at, there was a time that the hanger or the outside skirt would be the value. Price would be the value cut.
Yeah,
I don't know anymore.
Yeah, the flank steak. Yeah. Cuts are very expensive in the stores.
I was making flank steak for the family, so there were like 10 of us, so I needed a fair amount. And I texted my wife from the grocery store. I'm like, do you love your family enough to spend $80 worth of flank? Like, yeah. Do we love them that much that's for crazy, this sort right? of taco? Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Well, here's a great example. We got three first place in the barbecue world with our briskets last year at some pretty big competitions. And, you know, now we're getting $8, $9 a pound for brisket, you know, wow. So that's, yeah. That used to be almost free too back in the day.
Right. Yeah. You think about that. And for somebody like me, like I love brisket, but I am very nervous to order it at restaurants and barbecue spots because, you know, I mean, you get plenty of bad brisket from folks.
Absolutely.
And I certainly do not want to experiment with an $8 or $9 a pound brisket at home. Like I need to go to somebody I trust for that, you know?
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. How much fun has this been for you, Jeremy, kind of explore, you know, growing your business out there, going into this new area, really trying to create a premium product?
I've met some of the best chefs in Minnesota over the last few years, and it's just amazing what they can do with any product. And then you give them some of our best steaks, and it's just unbelievable. So it's been a lot of fun. I enjoy talking to them on the phone, and they're all looking always for something different. And with us having the whole cow to work with, you know, we've helped a lot of them create new dishes, and it's been a lot of fun.
It's got to be interesting. I mean, the reality today is that if someone's using your product, like I see it on the menu, it'll say Feller's Ranch. Like they are those chefs that you're seeing. And on your website, you have a list of some of the restaurants. I don't even think you have the complete list of all of the restaurants.
No, that needs
right?
to be updated. We've added a whole bunch.
Name drop a couple places so our listeners know where to find it.
Oh, Baltimore up in Roseville, 801 downtown.
Two great steakhouses. Tilted
Tiki out in Stillwater. We just brought on Waterbury, Oliver's and Blaine. We do the Wyzetta Country Club. I know I'm missing a few, but those are some of our better customers. And we're in Rochester at Mill Valley and Pittsburgh Blues.
It's pretty.
Plus locally, Albert Lee.
Yeah, it's got to be cool for you to see, you know, and Troy, when you go out and about and you see it as well, you see the name, which that wasn't always a thing.
Yeah, it's pretty special. And, you know, it's great to be a part of a legacy. You know, the Conger store was brought in on skids, and they kept it on skids when it started, because if they couldn't do good enough business in Conger, Minnesota, they would just move the butcher shop to the next town. So fortunately,
it's still on the skids.
That's how, you know, think back 90 years. Can you imagine bringing a building in via horses on skids?
It's crazy.
And it's crazy.
It's pretty cool. Well, people should check it out. Obviously, you're trying to keep up with demand. But if you go to fellersranch.com, there's a bunch of products there that you can buy directly. A lot of restaurants that people can check it out. And then a number of meat markets around the state where people can find it at the retail store too, right?
Yep.
Trying to expand that, right? Absolutely. You need more animals, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah, kind of an interesting
problem. Every time we try to go too fast, then we get stuff that don't make the quality grade. So
yeah.
Quality's critical for the restaurants that we're providing for.
Yeah.
And it's pretty serious. You know, ultrasounds are being done on these cattle at different stages, so we're checking out. That's a technique for imaging that's doesn't harm the cow, but it gives us a insight into the fat content of that cow and how it's progressing, or that cattle.
Crazy. Yeah, I was talking to a chef friend of mine who's in the Brainerd Lakes area, who has a supper club style restaurant, and he was saying that just he really struggles with the quality of the beef, the expectation that he has for the product and the supplier trying to get it, where, which is interesting. I think a lot of us who are just out there eating, you don't realize like how much attention is paid to sort of the specs or the quality that you would expect of the meat.
Yeah. And if you, we've had the fortunate, do some of our burger work, not the Wagyu burger, but some of the other burger work at a processing plants, separate processing plants. And we walk in and we see some of the meat that's being used to create the low-end burger. And we're like, whoa. So what's great about our products is it all of our Fellows Ranch products, all the products that are sold at Conger are processed at Conger and are graded and with loving, you know, loving care. So it's a high quality product. And the industry struggles with getting reliable quality product. And it's everything from where they're supplying that cattle from to the process itself for processing it and delivering a quality product to the end customer, whether that's a retail location, a restaurant, or the consumer.
Super interesting, guys. Thank you so much. We'll be keeping our eyes open for American Wagyu from right here in Minnesota in Conger, Fellers Ranch. Good stuff. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Yeah. Thank you for having us. You bet.
Thanks so much for listening to the DeRussia Eats podcast on WCCO Radio, 830 AM. We do conversations with chefs, with farmers, with small business people every Tuesday and Thursday at 4 p.m. The podcast is available every week. If you enjoyed what you heard, I would love for you to leave us a review. Give us however many stars you can. I don't know, 10, 20 stars would be nice, 5 stars. And leave your feedback as well. It really helps us grow and helps support covering the food community here at WCCO Radio and in the DeRussia Eats podcast. If you'd like to email me with an idea or a question about the restaurant scene, you can email Jason at Odyssey, AudacyAudacy.com. Jason at Odyssey.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time on the DeRussia Eats podcast.
Thanks for listening to DeRussia Eats. Dan Cook is our producer. Jason DeRussia is your host. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review. DeRussia Eats is a production of Odyssey.